All You Can Eat ist eine Sendung für alle, die ein wenig Punk in ihrem Leben brauchen, aber gerne auch noch etwas anderes atmen.
Und damit hallo und herzlich willkommen zu einer weiteren Ausgabe vom All You Can Eat Interview Podcast. Mein Name ist Lele Lukas und ich präsentiere euch heute ein Interview mit Witchpost. Witchpost, das sind Dylan und Alaska, die haben erst Solo-Musik gemacht, sich dann gefunden und machen jetzt eben zusammen wirklich, wirklich coole Mucke. Und ich habe mit ihnen am Abend vor ihrem Berlin-Konzert gesprochen, da haben sie die Butterfly-EP vorgestellt und auch ein Album oder eine Vinyl, auf der ihre beiden EPs drauf waren. Richtig, richtig coole Sachen. Und ja, wir haben uns über die Band unterhalten, darüber, wie es ist, so weit entfernt voneinander zu sein und trotzdem zusammen Musik zu machen. Und ich bin ein bisschen eingestiegen in die Mysterien des Musikschreibens, wann ist irgendwas richtig. Und es stellt sich raus, wenn Leute das ihr ganzes Leben lang machen, dann wisst ihr das irgendwann. Und das muss ich dann auch irgendwann mal lernen. Also, hier ist das Gespräch mit Witchpost. Viel Spaß.
Who are you?
I'm Alaska Reed and I'm half of Witchpost.
And I'm Dylan Fraser, the other half of Witchpost.
And it is a thing of many an interview that you are from very different parts of the world and there's a home city connection, correct?
Yes.
Is there sometimes where you pick up his accent or the other way around? Because you're together so much?
No, I try to teach Alaska Scottish words, so sometimes she'll like sprinkle it in there as a little joke, but no, I think it'd be pretty difficult and maybe we would get in trouble if we like did that. If we did one another.
He's a cloddy bastard. Eh? There we go. That's what I say all the time.
She's picking up on it.
Happens all the time. He's like, stop saying that.
I'm just for myself, sometimes when I'm around people who have you pick up little things, or when you spend a long time like on a holiday or something, you start talking like that. But
I sometimes start using the American term for things. If I'm around Alaska a lot, I just start saying, like, I can't even think of an example off the top of my head. It's like store or something, or start, like little things like that, you pick up on, and yeah, it's funny.
Do you start cursing differently? Like, is there a Scottish way to curse and an American way to curse, and do they...
I mean, I guess the Scottish way is actually just like adding an E to the end of the swear words. Like, but they're pretty universal, I think.
What?
Like shite instead of shit.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Okay. So you're here to... you released an EP. It's called Butterfly. And it's pretty long for an EP, isn't it? Is it? Is it not? I don't know.
I don't think there's rules anymore. I mean, I historically have been naughty in this department because I released Big Bunny when I was doing it was a solo album of mine, and it was, I can't even remember, maybe it was 9 tracks, 8 tracks.
Nine, yeah.
And I just called it an EP because there's this whole thing when you're a musician that this idea of the first record is kind of, you know, I don't know what, it's your first time. And, you know, for this idea of the first time, I think, in humanity, with anything, you apply that to anything in your life, and it's weird and it's a big moment. And I think we actually do want to have a great first record moment, but, you know, the way that we were operating, obviously, you know, in a literal sense, distance apart, we weren't signed, it was tricky to record. So we wanted to wait and kind of be able to craft the first album more, and we were super lucky that our record label picked us up and have enabled us to be able to kind of make it special in this way. And I'm not a big person, I don't think like first things have to be special, but you know, there's the press, you know, we always have to talk about press, so boring. And sorry, your press, yeah. It's fine, but podcast is different because it's more nuanced. But I think with press, this idea of first album, and we weren't really ready to do that yet. You know, we wanted to put out music, but I mean, who knows anymore? People listen to streaming and they don't even do full records. So I don't know. Does it matter?
Yeah. No, I think there's, I mean, any EP I've ever done has always been 6 or 7 tracks. I've always preferred longer forms as well. And because I think you can, you know, a 4-track EP is tough to like really get a kind of story or vision across in, you know. I think you need like, you know, you need at least 5 to like start getting some of the textures or like the through lines, you know. So I think, yeah, it's fun to play around with it. And they worked in tandem together, you know, and like for our vinyl that we just got pressed, that we do Beast and Butterfly, so it's on the one disc, you know, the A and the B side, so you know, it kind of feels like an album in ways, but it isn't.
What is it like trying to make music with all the things that you just mentioned and everything else around it? Is it fun still, or is it like, it didn't sound fun when you said it like that?
You know what? I think music becomes not fun when you think about the way that the whole industry and infrastructure works around it. That's not fun. And I think, I don't know who would really say that's fun, but that's fine, because I think that's a normal part of life. And the most beautiful thing about music is actually, no matter what, it's always an oasis, you know, for us. And I think the moment that it stops becoming an oasis, the actual generating of the content, going into the studio, writing a song together, then we're going to have to step back and reassess. But that's what's so amazing, is even when we're super annoyed about something and you're like, well, I really loved the song we were working on a month ago in the studio, and I loved how you were singing, and that guitar part made me feel something. Like, it always goes back to that. And so that's what's great about music.
Yeah, you definitely get a high off of the music, off of, you know, you see your vinyl in person that you've like worked on and designed, you know, like that stuff is what you get a high off. You know, the business side of it is the business side of it. It's not necessarily that exciting, you know. I mean, I guess if you want to do it as a job or as a career, that comes with it. But the actual thing that keeps you going and keeps you excited is always the creative side of it.
And then playing it live, of course, I guess. Or is tour is always... I never quite understood where work starts. Is it all work? Is it half work and half not? Because playing, is playing work? I don't know. You have to tell me that, because I don't...
I mean, yeah, I guess it is all work in a way, you know. Touring, like, especially, you know, when you're a small indie band, it's pretty gritty, you know. You have to, you're dragging your guitar cases, you're pissing everyone off and on like public transport, you know. It's grueling, but there, you know, there is like payoffs to it, you know. It's fun going and seeing new cities and like going for dinner with like the band, and you know, you have like fun times, and you know, playing on stage as well is really fun, especially when, you know, you feel like an energy from the audience. But I'd say, you know, playing on stage can also feel like work sometimes, you know. It's you've got a lot going on and a lot to think about, but sometimes you just get into a flow where it feels pretty easy, and then other times it can be like a battle.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. There are a lot of elements of it that do feel like work, and sometimes I also feel frustrated by that, because I, you know, it doesn't always directly feel like I'm maybe helping somebody or making the world a better place. And it's like, is this an ego game? And I can get into that kind of thought process, and then that makes things feel like work, you know. But when it comes to playing for people and seeing people in a room together and like smiling and happy, and seeing people that, like, I love going to a show or our shows and being like, that person and that person have a similar interest? That's so crazy. That's when, you know, it feels super fulfilling and it feels like a community building thing. But, I mean, honestly, the playing songs is such a weird thing, because it's kind of like, you know, in when you're on a hike or somewhere in nature and you see, like, an animal path. And people will go to you, oh, animals and humans have like walked this path for so many years, so many that you can imagine. And you're like, why this path? In a way, playing a song feels like that. It's like this kind of weird, repeated, ancient thing. I mean, we can dress it up with, you know, electric guitars, pedals, whatever, mics. But I mean, inherently us like just putting sounds out of our bodies and making them like gel together for other people to hear is really weird. And that doesn't ever feel like work. I just don't even know what it feels like, so.
You do it again and again and again and again.
The path.
Did you write Butterfly all together, or did you do the Dropbox per mail and then come together and pick out the best parts and throw everything out and do everything again kind of deal?
No, we did it all together. We, you know, anytime we make music or work on a project, we're always in the same room when we're doing, you know, the songs. But we, you know, in Alaska's in America, I'm in the UK, we obviously are coming up with ideas and things and little sort of like fragments of stuff, and then we come together and bring them to one another and, you know, work on it. And yeah, so it's like, yeah, we've always been in the same room. I think maybe sometimes people think that we're like on, like, you know, we're emailing things back and forth, and
we do sometimes videos, voice memos.
We're not
computer literate enough for Dropbox to successfully flow. So we usually send each other these like weird videos, or like I'll be in my pajamas playing something because the time difference, or vice versa. So
yeah, you know, I'd love to say that I was like getting like a really nice envelope and like burning something onto a tape and sending it to Alaska, but it's not quite as cool as that.
Would be kind of neat to get a mixtape in that sense. I don't know. So where do you get the ideas from that you take to the meeting, and how do you pick and choose, or do you just take everything?
I mean, you know, I think when you have a very long career as an artist, because I've had a couple different albums as a solo artist, you go through that initial phase of just writing what's just sitting in your brain, like what's easy to grab in the ether. And you put it out, and then, you know, album two or whatever comes around, or EP two, whatever you want to call it, doesn't matter, body of work number two. And then you start to be like, okay, how am I going to shift this? I think that's actually what being an artist is like consciously always trying to move stuff forward. And so I think with us initially, we had so many things that we wanted to do as a band, you know, things, for instance, Dylan didn't feel fulfilled by, you know, with his solo work, you know, he wanted to write particular songs. He couldn't, you know, because of the conditions that he was in the last time with his deal and what he was doing. And I had things that were, you know, I maybe heard some, you know, his voice on something, or I wanted to have it be rockier, and I have a kind of delicate voice, so I couldn't sing over it to the capacity I wanted. And so we kind of had all this stuff, and it just flowed out, like with our song Chill Out off of Beast. But I think what's been so beautiful now, moving forward and getting into the process of recording our first album, is that we're kind of stepping back and being like, these were all the things we wanted. These are all the like beginnings almost of things that we need to develop later. So yeah, with Beast and Butterfly, it was like just like sometimes it was fragments of things from before we were a band. Other times it was just us getting in the room together and being super excited and kind of just the first bit of territory. But now we're going deeper, so stay tuned.
Is that something that you have all in your head in that moment? Or do you have like a box of, like, I don't know how musicians transport their stuff. Do you have notebooks? Do you have voice notes that you pull up where you're like, oh, I think this one fits, let me just find it, or can you play it, or how do you piece the pieces together in that moment?
It's kind of a mess. I mean, it's everywhere. Like, I have pieces of paper, we have notebooks, we have, like, you know, notes app, we have voice memos. Oh, actually, I actually don't have voice memos, because voice memos on my phone just hasn't worked for like 4 years, and I have a new phone that still doesn't work because I think I have too many or something, but it just freezes. So I actually have like really like kind of horrible videos of myself, like when I'm like recording an idea, or I'm kind of like, you know, it's from below, kind of unflattering. So that's where a lot of mine are.
We'll sketch stuff out on Logic sometimes, but yeah, we have like voice memos. But I mean, honestly, a lot of it is in our heads, because, you know, instead of doing other things, I mean, literally my whole life I've been training my brain to be able to keep all of the, we do a lot of alternate tunings for every song, all the tunings, all my lyrics, like, you know, God forbid, but if something happened to me, like, a lot of stuff would be lost because I just keep it in my brain. A lot of songs, like, even ideas, like, we'll speak about them and then come back to it. And it's kind of maybe like we're testing the strength of an idea or the strength of a melody. We're trying to get better with that because it's a little bit hairy. Sometimes we'll be like, can I cuss on this?
No. Sure, go for
okay.
it.
I'm not, I don't feel the need now, but I just want to know for later.
Yeah,
but
yeah, no,
we'll be like, you know, darn, we don't remember that great melody or how the hell did I play that guitar line? But then it's almost like a training exercise to reverse engineer that. So it's interesting.
Yeah. It's hard when you can't remember the guitar part. It's actually really difficult.
Yeah. Are you a band that practices a lot before a show, like to have everything really down, or do you, I don't know, wing it is the wrong word, I think, but do you rely on having everything ready instead?
I mean, we practice, but, you know, I've done like 10 years of gigging, so if I'm going to put something in my brain for a show, it's, I'm going to force it in there, like, you know, it's going to happen. Sometimes it might be a little rocky, but it gets in there. You know what I mean? But yeah, we've been rehearsing, and we have a really good rapport with our live members here. So in terms of, we just have a good flow with them. And so I feel like we almost need to do less rehearsal than our American band, which is, this is a problem. This is a boring technical problem, but we need to figure out how to have one band visas, crap like that. But yeah, we practice. I mean, we do a lot of practicing when we're writing too, because we're not writing into the computer. You know, when we're writing, like Dylan and I are often, most of the time, we're facing each other with like either acoustic guitars, electric guitars, and we're singing these things over and over and over. And so that kind of like prints it in your brain.
Yeah, that's true, actually. I never think about that when we're writing. We basically, for the most part, structure out the whole song, so we're playing together, you know, and singing and getting it right before we record. So we've kind of already, in ways, we've already played the songs in full together before we go in to rehearse them, which is, yeah, interesting.
Did you do that from the start, or did you end up there, sitting across from each other and making the music like that?
We did that from the start. I think, you know, I guess it's like the world we come from in ways, is that we've always had our guitars and we've like written songs on our guitars. And, you know, with my solo stuff, I've done the other thing, and I actually think that I get better songs when I don't do the just like plug in to like computer thing. Because, you know, I think sometimes you can tend to, you put something down, and for me anyway, I get maybe stuck or kind of like demo-itis for things. So it's nice to, like, for this band, for us to not put anything down until we're pretty locked in on the part. And then you can have fun with the sounds or whatever. But I think sometimes when you demo something too early, it can almost, like, the song ends up having a ceiling. Like, you almost, in a weird way, give it a ceiling because you're like, oh, I like how this sounds, and you kind of get lazy. Right? And you maybe don't actually, like, look at the song as a whole and really, like, hone in on it. And, you know, sometimes that's great, but I think sometimes for other songs you need to like take a bit more time.
Okay. That is really cool that works for you. Like that you get along good enough to make so much music just sitting there like and having that happen. That is neat.
Yeah, I mean, also when we were recording Beast and Butterfly, a lot of it would start on one of our Logic sessions when we had gotten to that point where we're like, okay, we can put this down. But then I'm not that great at operating it, so I'll just replay it. So there's like lots of guitar takes, or Dylan and I would be like, nah, we can beat it. Like, we're not going in there and doing the kind of slicing and stuff, which I actually really respect. I think that's really cool. I wish I was better at that, but I think in some way a lot of our practicing came from you doing like 20 vocal takes or guitar takes, and the same for me. And then we're like, wow, okay.
Is that a sign of a not so great song when after 20 takes you don't want to sing it anymore? Does that ever happen?
I mean, honestly, that's pretty rare for us, I feel like. Like, I feel like we we don't finish a song. We know pretty quickly, I think, if a song is worth taking our time, like finishing, you know? I don't think we ever, we're not one of those bands that has like 100 songs for their album, you know? And then you pick the 10 or 12 that you want. Like we write the songs, and any songs that come into, you know, our vicinity, they don't feel right. They kind of don't even sprout. You know what I mean? They don't even get that far, I don't think. We'd know pretty soon, like, no. We'd just move on to something else.
Do you have any favorites on Butterfly, or are they all favorite children?
I think it changes always. I really love Changeling. I really felt like the writing of that felt really natural. I don't know, it came out easily, and that is always really cool because it feels like, you know, something magical is at work. And I also really love Witching Hour because Witching Hour is the same. And then I have, like, you know, there's different reasons I love different ones. I love Tilt-A-Whirl because it's like so connected to my past. And then, I mean, now what else is on? Now I can't even remember what else is on it. What else? What was it?
We have
Something to Give,
Worry Angel, Country Sour.
Oh, yeah.
There's a few.
I love all of them, actually.
Yeah, I love them all, too. I mean, we wouldn't have probably put them on it if we didn't enjoy them. But I love Witching Hour. That one just always feels special to me. I mean, they all feel special in their own ways, but that one really stands out for me a lot. And I also love Worry Angel. I really like the interplay of our vocals on Worry Angel. Mm. I think it's fun.
Maybe that is a repetition of a question, but is there like different versions of the songs that you try out, or do you really just hone in on one thing that works, or is there like three versions of Witching Hour and then you figured out which one was the one you liked the most?
Well, with Witching Hour, that one actually came around really quickly. There's only ever been one version. I mean, that song was literally like guitars recorded.
You did one vocal take.
Like, we were planning to actually, you know, we were like, let's just put in a scratch vocal. We hadn't even spoken about our lyrics to one another. We were just like, let's just put this in. We had the Codis lyric, and that was it. And we were like, oh, we'll probably just put a scratch vocal in, and then we'll come back to this and, like, work on lyrics. But then something happened where we put in the scratch, and we're like, oh, that's it. So there's only one version of that, but there is, I mean, I guess you could call them versions of other songs. When you know, you have like a work in progress session, but I wouldn't say, I think once we've like put something in to like that degree, like I said, we're already there, you know, like we're not really like massively deconstructing things and putting them back together, you know?
We try to keep it spontaneous, because it's also, I think, a kind of ethos of our band, you know, to not get too precious. I know there's a lot of people that work for really, I think it's really cool, it's just we don't really work like that. Yeah, and we try to do a lot of the almost like, we try to inform the production almost with the songwriting. So we kind of really work the songwriting before it goes into like a production, because I think sometimes when people are doing both, and I've had this experience with my own stuff, you can kind of get confused as to what's what unless you are incredibly good at it. Because I've seen people that don't have that problem at all, but I'm not good at, you know, we self-produced our things, and I'm still learning, I'm still green in terms of the production thing. And so we just really tried to, because we didn't want to get demo-itis, we didn't want to get like emotional about something that actually wasn't the song, really. And so we just made sure that the song was really, really good. I'm not being very articulate, but before we put it in the computer, whatever, printed it into the sounds. I don't know.
It is always, I think, for me, from the outside, hearing people talk about it, it is a very weird thing to hear how people make stuff, because they're always like, well, it felt right, and there it is. It is like, okay, cool. It's great that it works that way for you. So it's, yeah, it's absolutely fine.
Do you do music?
No, I've never. Okay. Turns out that for music you need to practice.
Okay.
and I was never good at practicing. So I can still play Seven Nation Army and Bomb Track, and I think from Rage Against the Machine, and I think that's it on bass, and that's where I stop. So that's but yeah, I mean, yeah, it is a yeah. So that's that. Let's do two more things. One is you're playing a tour now. If that is okay to ask, you've tried. There was another one that was somewhat halfway announced, and that didn't happen. And now, is it going down? Yes.
No, I got excited about a bird I'd never seen before.
Sorry.
A German bird.
And now you're playing too. You played in Paris yesterday. Mm-hmm. You're playing Berlin tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And how's it feeling? You're flying around, you're in a hotel. You're used to it because you've been doing it forever, or is it something new in a sense? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we're tired. We're definitely tired. But, you know, it's always the fact that people want to get a ticket and come to our show and see us play, you know, is really special, and it's nice talking to people every night who like our band. And, you know, we're not from Paris or Berlin or London or Leeds. You know, yeah, we're anywhere we've played, you know, and there's people there who are like, oh yeah, we're gonna go see these people, and that's pretty cool, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't, you know, I never played Europe when I was doing solos. Well, actually I did once, but I just played the U.S. mainly, so it is totally different for me. I mean, being able to take trains and get good food is pretty shocking, because it's like, in America, there's like particular places to get good food, but, and there's obviously no trains, unless I'm like going to be on a freight train or a really long, long one. I think there's one, maybe. But yeah, it's been really good. I mean, we're just... It's really interesting. I'm curious how the music industry moves in the next decade or so, and how things will stay and how things will change. But, it feels like playing shows is, it's quantifiable, and I think people like that, you know. And it's cool for us. I mean, last night was great. London was great. Leeds was insane.
Yeah.
I thought we played Leeds, and I was like, are we in the 80s or something? Because it's just the way that people interacted with the whole night and the whole town and our merch and us. It was like, as if, the streaming corporate overlords weren't like on our necks all the time. I was like shocked by it. I don't know. It was really like, felt like grassroots rock and roll there. So you can cut that out in case.
No, that's fine.
You know, for.
I am. I don't care for those. Like, I get that. And I do think it is cool that shows are one of the core things that kind of stayed somewhat the same, even though tickets are a wild thing. And it's sometimes in the US more terrible to get tickets than here at times. It depends on how it goes.
I can tell you this, we don't have that problem yet. So I can't even. We don't have dynamic ticket pricing.
No.
Everybody, anybody listening to this podcast, you can come. You can probably even DM us online, we'll put you on the list.
That is one of the greatest mysteries to my small self, is how that comes to be when you are such a ginormous artist. And I get that things cost money to make, but I do think at some point you've hit that, what you needed to make, what you make. And then I'm like, well, then shouldn't, I don't know, $100 is a lot. Like 80 euros is like, shouldn't that be enough for like 20,000 people who come see you? I don't know.
Yeah. Like, we'll let you know later. We just like screw all of our fans over. Just kidding. Maybe we won't do that.
No, I think it just, it's interesting. Like, yeah, obviously, if you want to do a more elaborate tour setup, things cost money. But I think that limiting your art, or like limiting art to like how much people can afford, isn't good. I think that, you know, I wish we could go back to like, tickets are this price and that's what it is, and you can go to a show and, you know, people can go. I think when it starts to get like, you know, £1,000 to go see someone, it's like, it's ridiculous. It's crazy.
Yeah, true. Did I forget anything? Were you like, this is important?
No, I don't think so. It's been fun.
It's great. All right, cool.
Das war das Gespräch mit Witchpost. Ihre EP, die letzte, heißt Butterfly, die davor hieß Beast. Und ich kann sie euch nur wirklich empfehlen. Manchmal ist Musik schon sehr gut und dann kommt ein Konzert dazu oder für mich in dem Fall dann auch ein Interview und gibt Kontext, gibt noch dieser Sache, die vorher nur Musik ist, noch mehr Körper, noch mehr Sein. Und das ist hier auf jeden Fall der Fall gewesen. Und wenn ich jetzt Worry Angel höre, dann denke ich darüber nach, wie Dylan meinte, ja, er macht sich immer so viele Gedanken, gerade beim Fliegen und so weiter, und dass er einen kleinen Worry Angel dabei hat. Und irgendwie dann wächst das Ganze und es macht nochmal doppelt so viel Spaß, sich die Sachen anzuhören, weil sie noch mehr Kontext haben. Witchpost als Band, da haben sie ja auch im Interview gesagt, machen jetzt irgendwas mit einem Album, was auch immer das bedeuten mag. Und ich hoffe, dann kommen sie auch wieder zurück nach Deutschland und spielen nochmal vor ein paar mehr Leuten. Denn das war wirklich, wirklich cool, die live zu sehen. Und ich freue mich darauf, das irgendwann wieder zu machen. An der Stelle vielen, vielen Dank für das Interview. Und das ist so ein Interview, muss halt reifen. Oder so, versuche ich mich jetzt rauszureden. Danke fürs Interview, alles, alles Gute, bis zum nächsten Mal. Wenn euch das gefallen hat, dragonseedeverything.com, da gibt es noch mehr Interviews und lasst uns gerne bei iTunes, bei Apple, bei Spotify eine 5-Sterne-Review für den Podcaster. Das wäre ganz ausgezeichnet. Tschüss.
I dedicate this program to the fight against crime. Not merely crimes of violence and crimes of dishonesty, but crimes of intolerance, discrimination and bad citizenship.
Good night. And good luck.